You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
Mike and I are from Barataria, Louisiana. It is about 30 miles southwest of New Orleans, and it is a fishing community in the estuary, in the swamps. Our community, our economy in our community is totally reliant on the natural resources. We are a fishing community, commercial fishermen. We have charter recreational businesses and tourism businesses. Our community is located approximately 40 miles from the Gulf of Mexico, and there is nothing between our community and the Gulf of Mexico but millions of acres of bayous and bays and lakes. It's just a huge, beautiful estuary. We fish shrimp, crabs, blue crabs, finfish of different sorts. But all of our vessels, the majority of our fishermen are inland, small vessel, family fishermen. Everything is family owned and operated in our community. We don't have factory trawlers in Louisiana. We have some bigger golf boats, but the majority of our fishermen operate these type of boats in the inland waters. Every year, just before the shrimp season in the spring, we have what's called a Blessing of the Fleet Festival, where everybody decorates their boats and takes them to be blessed in preparation for the shrimp season, the fishing season to start. That's our boat. We have 5 children and 17 grandchildren, most of whom are on that boat right now. Most of the people in our community stay in the community. 4 of our children and 11 of our grandchildren are in our community. Our oldest son lives outside of the community but comes to visit often. That blessing picture was taken April 20th of this year, the day that the BP rig exploded in the Gulf of Mexico, killing 11 men and starting one of the biggest oil spills to have happened in the Gulf of Mexico or in this country ever, in the United States ever. We had an early opening of our shrimp season in the water because of the explosion, and we didn't know if the oil was going to come into the inside waters, into our fishing grounds. And so our wildlife and fisheries opened it. We have been, for a long time, our fishermen and our community. The oil companies came to Louisiana in the 20s, and it was our fishermen who tried to blockade them, to stop them from dredging the oilfield canals through our marsh in our estuary. And they tried to hold them off with machine guns because they knew if they started dredging those canals that our land would start to wash away, that salt water would come in and kill our marshes. And they have fought with the oil companies. It's like a love-hate relationship where we are, because that's all we have. We have oil or we have fishing. And so the fishing goes up and down according to cycles of the fish or weather conditions, temperatures, salinities impact how many fish you have, how many shrimp you have. So our fishermen, our Association of Family Fishermen, formed this Louisiana Bayou Keeper to work on water quality and habitat protection, because we were seeing our estuary wash away. We were seeing water quality decline and nobody doing anything about it. And we knew that you could take every commercial fisherman and recreational fisherman out of the water, and if you do nothing about your water quality and protecting that habitat, that estuary, then you will have a major fisheries collapse, because the fisheries cannot survive without good water quality and habitat. 90% of the fish, marine life, in the Gulf of Mexico spends some portion of its life in our estuary. So it's critical habitat. That happened in 2007, 2006 or 2007. A tugboat ran over a wellhead, a brand new wellhead.
That was a 10,000 barrel spill. From 20 to 100 barrels, they don't even report that in Louisiana. You have to understand, where we live, oil and gas is king. We have hundreds of communities along our coast, not unlike British Columbia, all fishing communities. And there's not one community on our coast anymore that doesn't have oil and gas in it in one way, shape, or form. They're there. They're there unloading, loading. They're running service companies out of it. So when they come to town, before long, it's not just one place. They take over the whole place. In South Louisiana, there's only two things you can do for a living anymore. You either work for the oil companies or you fish. That's basically it. There's a little bit of tourism. There's a little bit of recreational fishing. But the predominant employer in South Louisiana is oil and gas. So, you know, if I don't know what's going to happen in British Columbia, but 30 super tankers visit coastal Louisiana a week, 30 of them. 20 of them unload at Louisiana Offshore Oil Port, and the rest get lightered in what they call lightering areas. They'll take the super tanker and they'll take the oil off and put it on smaller tankers, and those smaller tankers can go up the Mississippi River. We have 80 chemical plants and refineries between the mouth of the Mississippi River and Baton Rouge. They call where we live Cancer Alley because the cancer rate is so high there. And I'm 51 years old, and I don't know a time when I did not see oil and gas in coastal Louisiana. I've grown up with it. And I have all these grandkids, and I don't know what their futures are going to hold because of oil and gas being in coastal Louisiana. But, you know, when they come, they offer good jobs, you know, well-paying jobs, secure jobs. You have benefits. But there's a trade-off. You know, they'll come to town, and they'll improve your lifestyle. They really will. But the trade-off is going to be your health and your environment. And they can't get around it. They can sugarcoat it all they want. They do a lot of damage. Damage, damage, damage. That's what oil and gas has done to Louisiana in my lifetime. It's disappearing at an alarming rate. Now, I'm not, you know, I'll be the first one to say we can't not do without oil and gas. I can't shrimp without diesel. I can't drive my truck to deliver shrimp without diesel. But they can do a way, way better job than they do. I've seen probably 100 oil spills in my lifetime living in coastal Louisiana. And, you know, if you guys want to live with that, well, then have oil and gas come to town. And that's the truth.
And this is Bayou Piro, which is just to the southwest, 5 minutes from my house. A tugboat hit that wellhead at the bottom there in the middle of the night, did not call it in, didn't stop, and it spewed oil into Bayou Piro all night long until a recreational fisherman went going out in the morning saw it and reported it. It was later that day before the Coast Guard even really showed up out there. We contacted every media person we could think of, and they would not come out. They would not do a story on it. It wasn't big enough. That area, that oil went from there all the way up to Lake Salvador, to the north of our community, and all the way south to Little Lake, which covers, what, probably about 25 miles. And they didn't think that was a big enough thing to report on. That water bottom, because they come out there, they sink all the oil with dispersants to the bottom, that water bottom was dead for 3 years. You couldn't fish there. Those are wellheads, and they are everywhere. There's thousands of them. What the guys used to the fishermen used to use landmarks to get around out there because it all looks the same, pretty much. So it was landmarks that they marked. Now it's wellheads because the land is washing away from the oil field canals, and they've just got them everywhere, and a lot of them are abandoned. We have pipelines. If you put a map of the Gulf Coast up and then overlay all the pipelines on the top of it, you can't see the land anymore because there's so many of them. And a lot of them are abandoned. A lot of wellheads are abandoned, and they leak. And the reason they're abandoned, because big oil companies, once the amount of oil that they're getting out of a well slips below a certain level, then they sell it to a smaller company, which sells it to another company and another one until somebody goes bankrupt and they don't clean any of it up. They leave it there, leaking everywhere. So that's some of the things our fishermen were working on trying to get corrected prior to the BP spill. Our whole coastal Louisiana is littered with this stuff. They just leave it behind. They don't care. They don't care. And the only people that see it are fishermen. We're the only ones that can see what they're doing out there because we're the only ones there. Then the BP spill happened. And these are some photographs of the different forms it came in. And when you think oil, you think black stuff's going to come in. Well, that black stuff came in ribbons all over the beach. And then everybody's familiar with what looks like, you know, oil or gasoline on top of water, the sheen. But this is what they call chocolate mousse. And it's another form of oil that's mixed with dispersant that was all over the beach and all in our water. It happened April 20th, and we waited, you know, hoping they would cap that thing and control that oil before it got into the estuary, because our fishermen figured if they kept it from coming in to the estuary, whatever's in the estuary could restock the Gulf. And so we waited a month, and it was high stress, not knowing what was going to happen, and then it just inundated. That's the boom they used to try to keep it from coming into the estuary. The problem is they dispersed the oil. So it was distributed throughout the water column and just went in underneath those booms. It just came in underneath it through all the bayous and passes from the Gulf into the estuary. That is called Queen Bess Island, which is in Barataria Bay. Everything inside that boom around that island, it's a bird island. That's where they nest, and they nest at the time of the year that this oil spill happened. So all of these birds were impacted. Their eggs, everything. Inside the boom is full of oil because the tide comes up, and the oil goes under there into the island and into the marsh. And then the tide goes down, and it's all trapped inside of the boom instead of holding the oil outside of the boom.
It's really overwhelming. When it first happened, when we first heard it was coming to inland waters, I was at home, and early one morning a friend of mine called. We knew it was coming. We kept thinking, the fishermen, we know the tides, we know how it works, and we thought if a batch of this oil breaks off and comes west around the mouth of the Mississippi River, that the tide is just going to take it straight up into Barataria Bay where we live and work. And sure enough, it happened. So that morning, a friend of mine was out fishing. He called me. He said, "You got to come out here. You're not going to just come out here. You're not going to believe this." And so I wasn't prepared for what I was going to see. So I grabbed my grandson and said, "Come on, Scotty." I got in a high-speed boat, and I took off running south. I took her with me and another friend of ours. And about halfway out, we had been smelling oil for about a month. You can smell it every night from the spill. It was overwhelming. But on the ride out that day, it was enough to knock you out. It was so overpowering, the smell of this oil. So as we continued south into Barataria Bay, which is my fishing ground, you know, being a fisherman, a commercial fisherman, we have our favorite spots to work and all, and Barataria Bay is where I make a lot of my money, and that's mostly where I work is Barataria Bay. That's my spot. So we're headed out to Barataria Bay, and as soon as I got in Barataria Bay, I hit oil. And I was like, well, this can't last too long. So I ran about 10 miles. I'm still in oil. I'm running. That entire day, I could not get out of oil. I mean, and this is a massive expanse of water. No matter where I rode to Full Bayou Pass, one of my favorite shrimping areas, oil. I went to Queen Bess Island, another spot, oil. I went to the east side of the bay, oil. It was, you just can't imagine it unless you have lived it, the immensity of this oil spill. And friends of mine that had already been working on the spill in the Gulf, shrimpers that they had hired, BP had hired them to work, I saw them. Skimming oil with booms, and I ran up to them and I was like, man, where's the end of this oil? They said it doesn't end. It goes on for hundreds of miles in the Gulf of Mexico, and it just started coming in here. Well, I was floored. I mean, I don't know if any of y'all want to live through that with your coast, but that's what we had to live through. Now, I consider myself a pretty tough guy, and you know, I'm a gung-ho fisherman. I wept. I mean, I did. I cried. I had my grandson. I didn't want him to see me crying. The only other time I had cried before that was 30 years ago when my father passed. So that's the impact that has on you. So, I mean, I'm up here to talk to you people about the possibility of what oil and gas can do. Well, that's a possibility, and it's real. And until it happens to you, you don't know the impact of it. Now, I might have been able to run 50 miles further west or 60 miles west and got out of the oil, but it was impacting me directly. And it was impacting an immense area that I make my living in. So, you know, I mean, that's the risk you run with having oil and gas coming to town.
Our home, like I said, is 40 miles inland. We're on the water. We're surrounded by the water. It's 150 miles from the well that blew out. That oil came into our house and into the waters behind our home. June 6th, it rolled into our community. The air was full of oil. There was a oil slick on the water behind our home for months, not just for a few days, but for months. It was in the air. When it rained, it would leave a black film all over everything and in our vents, our air-conditioned vents in our house. Everybody on the Gulf Coast was breathing oil mixed with dispersant. And people are sick. Everybody is getting sick from it. That's on the beach. When it first started coming in, it would look like little red pebbles. But when you picked it up, what it was dispersant, oil, and sand mixed together. And then when it hit the beach and washed up on top of the beach, it would melt into these red, rust-colored gobs that would just then work its way down into the sand. They sunk this stuff to the bottom so people couldn't see it anymore. But it's there. And all of the bottom-feeding animals and the things that live in the bottom, how is that supposed to live with that being left behind? They want to leave it behind. They don't want to clean it up. They use the dispersant for one reason and one reason only, and that was to sink it to the bottom so they didn't have to clean it up and people wouldn't see it anymore. So they would think it's gone. But that oil is still coming in and it's still hitting our marsh. And it is still doing it today, every single day, and settling on the bottoms of our estuary. While our government and the oil companies continue to tell us it's all gone. It's not gone. The oil is still there. Everything that we do on and our lifestyle is not a Monday through Friday, 9-to-5 lifestyle. The kids learn how to hunt. They learn how to clean the meat and how to cook the meat because that's just part of the way we live. That's what we eat. venison, ducks, whatever is in our environment down there. So this dispersant and oil, it affects everything about us. These kids also work. It's a family business, and they go and look forward to shrimp season. Our schools get out in our communities for the year in May, right around when our shrimp season will start, because these kids expect to be able to make the opening. And so they earn money, and this has been just a horrible, horrible time for them. They're confused. They saw boats go out this summer to work on oil cleanup and couldn't understand why they couldn't go with their fathers to work. They couldn't swim in the bayou. They couldn't fish. They couldn't do anything that they normally do. The entire community is so stressed by this disruption in our life, the contamination. There are a lot of problems going on within the community, within relationships, because of the stress of that. And it's if these oil companies use a playbook, the same playbook over and over and over again. They pit brother against brother, people in the community against each other by hiring some boats and not hiring others, paying large claims to some fishermen and nothing at all to others. It's just a big, big problem that I guess we're going to have a long time in going. So if there's anything you can do, now, don't allow your elected officials to say, we need the jobs from the oil and gas. You need to tell them, no, we don't want to trade off our environment, our quality of life, and our health for those kind of jobs. Find something else. Put faith in small businesses, in entrepreneurs, in your community. Support that. Bring in jobs that are going to improve your life, not take things from you. Thank you.